I plead with her. She giggles, thoroughly enjoying my compliments and admiration of her dancer's body, as she should. She should always feel like this, beautiful and empowered. She's still a little drunk, but she's glowing at my words, which makes me want to be a little more wild. "You are so beautiful, you know that?" I say, wanting her to bathe in my words, to wrap herself in the kind of words she deserves to hear. I keep a straight face, experimenting. "You're fucking smoking, and if you hadn't gotten yourself drunk tonight, I would tear your little ass up." I sound like a damn idiot, but according to most erotic novels, this is what girls are into. Dakota bursts into laughter. She holds one hand up and looks at me. "You would tear my little ass up?" She cracks up. Her eyes are closed, and I can't help but join in. "Hey," I try to breathe, but my stomach aches from laughing so hard. "I read it in a book and wanted to see what it sounded like to say." Dakota pauses and struggles to hold her laughter in. "Let's just stick to the plain stuff that you're good at and leave the sexy stuff to the books." She covers her mouth and dips her head, snorting laughter. "Plain stuff I'm good at? Hey, I know we haven't experimented very much, or ever, but that's not because I wasn't willing. She never brought it up. And once, after I tried to talk about porn to her, she broke up with me for 3 days. So if any of the things that I'm good at are plain, they're not that way for my lack of trying." "I'm not that plain," I retort, defending my skills but making sure to keep my voice down. I do not want Tessa or Nora to hear this. I sit down on my bed. Dakota walks over, her mouth still turned up into a smile. She pulls the corner of her lip between her teeth. Maybe now you aren't, but you were with me. Maybe I'm being overly sensitive, but I feel like she's diminishing every intimate time we've had together. Our sex was teenage sex, rushed and quiet, even though I was hopelessly in love with her. It's not like I could have taken her any way that I wanted to, with Carter in the next room or her dad asleep downstairs. I never felt shortchanged with her, and I don't remember feeling like anything was missing in our sex life. I thought we were active and happy and satisfied. Apparently not. Dakota sits down on the bed next to me and crosses her legs. She puts on a pair of my socks sometime between teasing and laughing at me. She clears her throat. "How many girls have you been with since we broke up?" When I look at her, she's twirling a chunk of her hair between her thumb and forefinger. "How many?" "None," I scoff, trying to force a non-awkward laugh. She raises her eyebrow at me and cocks her head. "Really? Come on, I know." "You have?" I interrupt. If she's acting this surprised that I haven't slept with anyone, how many people has she slept with? Dakota shakes her head. "No, I haven't. I just assumed you did." "Why would you assume that? And sitting here in the night, bringing all these things up, I'm starting to think this woman doesn't know me at all." Dakota doesn't say anything. She just shrugs her shoulders and lies down with her head propped up against the headboard. She stares up at the ceiling before finally proclaiming, "Today was not fun." I should change the subject. I finally got her in bed and calm and mostly sober. "It's fine. It's over, anyway. It's gotta be like 2 a.m. by now," I tell her. She smiles and I lie down and turn off the lamp. "Thank you for everything, Landon. You're always my safe place," she whispers in the dark. I can feel her eyes on me even though I can't see them. "Always," I reply, and gently squeeze her hand. Today wasn't fun, she's right. Today was stressful. I started the day thinking I was going on a first date-like thing with Nora, but then ended up with a drunk Dakota in my bed and Nora in my living room, probably listening to every embarrassing word Dakota and I say in here. The hallway is short and the walls are thin. Even worse, I feel guilty for leaving her at the lounge. I didn't know what else to do. I've known Dakota half of my life. I've already gone through those terrible early stages of love with her. Together we made it through the awkward adolescent sex stage, where you can't find where to put it, and come almost instantly when you do. We worked out most of our kinks and already know each other's backstory. We have no secrets, tell no lies. We've shared tragedy. I've already confessed my love for Dakota, and to start again would be daunting. Especially if she really has missed me as much as she says. Just as I think Dakota is asleep, she jerks her hand from mine and brings it to her face. That's when I notice the sounds of crying. I sit up. My hands gently shake her shoulders, and I ask her over and over what's wrong. She shakes her head and catches her breath. I wait to turn on the light, knowing that the truth is easiest told in the dark. She cries. I slept with two people. Her words slice through me like her cries slice through the darkness. And as if I've been burned, I suddenly don't want to be near her. My instinct is to run, to get far, far away. My stomach aches and she cries again, trying to cover her mouth. She reaches for a pillow and presses it to her face to keep herself quiet. Regardless of my pain, I can't stand to see her like this. And so I do what I always do. I put my feelings on hold. I pack the anger down. I tell my desire to run off without me. I reach for the pillow and remove it from her face. I toss it to the floor and lift her into my arms and lay both of us down, an intertwined pair. I'm so sorry, she chokes. Her cheeks are soaked with tears, and I thumb at them, catching them before they roll down her face. Her shoulders are shaking, and I can feel her pain, or guilt, maybe. Or our lost history, and it's throbbing inside of me, too. I gently push at her shoulders to keep her still and raise my hand to her forehead. I brush back her hair and gently caress the strands, rubbing her scalp. Shh, I say. Today is over, I say. We'll deal with this tomorrow, I say. Get some rest. I continue to massage her head until she falls asleep. If she wants to work this out, I'm willing to listen to her. There has to be some explanation that makes sense. And now that she's told me the truth, she's going to be okay with telling me what happened. As soon as she wakes up, she will explain everything. Except she didn't. When she woke up, she snuck out of my apartment without a word. Chapter 16. When I walk out of my room, I'm quiet so as not to wake Tessa. I know she's going to want to discuss last night, but I need coffee before attempting any such thing. As I tiptoe down the short hallway, I glance at the square picture frames that Tessa spent hours hanging up, making them all perfectly parallel with one another along the wall. Inside of each frame is a portrait of a cat dressed in different types of hats. The one closest to me is a tabby, its gray Panama-style hat streaked with black and brown to match the wearer's fur. A big white feather sticks up from the front. I've never really paid attention to the portraits. But in the strange mood of this morning, I feel a pull to examine them, and find them really pretty entertaining. I had noticed that they were cat-related, but that was the extent of it. The next cat is another tabby, but instead of gray and black, it's all orange and cream. It's fat, this one, and I chuckle at the bowler hat it's wearing. A tuxedo cat exhibits his top hat, naturally. These are pretty clever, and I want to shake the hand of whoever created them for taking something so simple and making it quirky and giving me the perfect distraction this morning. I glance at the rest of the pictures and stay as quiet as possible as I reach the end of the hall. I'm a little surprised to find Nora sleeping on the couch. I had thought maybe she'd go home now that she knew Dakota and I weren't over at their place. But there she is, her arm hanging over the edge of the cushion and her fingertips dangling just above the wood floor. Her dark hair is pulled up high on her head, and her knees are folded up, her lips parted slightly as if in a sigh. Her eyes are closed tightly. I walk on my toes, my soft socks barely make a sound as I pass through into the kitchen. After I realized that Dakota left before the sun came up, I went back to sleep for a while. I wasn't actually surprised that she left. I was mostly disappointed that I let any bit of me actually believe I would wake up to her next to me. She was being silly last night, being the old version of herself that loved to be around me. The silly girl who I've loved half of my life. Now the sun has come up, and she's disappeared from my bed, taking the light with her. The wind must have picked up sometime in the night, and it howls through the open kitchen window, making the yellow curtain flap against the glass. I can hear the rain picking up as I draw closer. And when I look out of the window and down at the sidewalk, I see a garden of umbrellas amid the downpour. Green and white polka dots is walking faster than tan and army green, and red is the slowest of them all. The umbrella tops sort of look like flowers from here, and I'm surprised by how crowded the sidewalks are, even in the rain. I glance over at Nora and quietly close the window before the noise of the rain and wind wakes her. I was going to make something for breakfast, but that's too noisy, so I'll probably just walk down and grab a bagel from the shop on the corner. Though, if I leave now, I might not be here when she wakes up, and I would like to talk to her about last night. I want to apologize to her for being so quick to leave with Dakota, without giving her a proper explanation. She's not really the type of woman to be jealous of another. I've heard her ramble about shows like The Bachelor, and claim that she would be the ultimate contestant precisely because she isn't jealous. Not that I want her seething with jealousy, but I would hate to think it didn't matter to her at all that Dakota inadvertently crashed our date and I ended up being a jerk and leaving with her. On the other hand, of course, I don't want her to feel any pain or discomfort around me, and I want to make sure she's not upset over last night. It was a big misunderstanding, and I'm sure she gets it. But do I get it? Actually, I don't think that I do get anything that has happened between me and either of these two women in the last 24 hours. At this point, I would probably kill to have both of them explain our situations to me in layman's terms. I do not understand dating in this city, despite the fact I always hear that men have some sort of upper hand here. I try to break everything down in my head while staring at the bright yellow curtain covering the window. 1. Nora touched my stomach after she found me in the shower, then she kissed me, then she invited me out with her friends. 2. I left with Dakota in the middle of our date-like thing, in front of her friends. Even if she doesn't like me, that couldn't have been good for her ego. 3. She watched Dakota walk into my room last night, most likely heard at least some of our conversation, and most likely assumed we had sex. This is so damn awkward. I don't even know if Nora likes me. She's a huge flirt. I sigh, wishing that I had a clue about women and their minds. I open the fridge slowly and wince when two root beer bottles clink together on our wobbly door shelf. I grab the one closer to me and steady it, resting the refrigerator door on my hip. I grab a 2-day-old takeout box, noodles with some sort of peanut sauce and chunks of questionable chicken, and close the fridge. I turn and Nora is standing there, her eyes sleepy and her hair messy. I jump in surprise and nearly drop the leftovers, but she just smiles up at me. Her smile is a lazy morning smile and her eye makeup is smeared around her eyes. "You woke me up," she says, and rolls the sleeves of her sweatshirt up her forearms. Her black shorts are so short that when she turns around and walks toward the fridge, I can see the curve of her ass where it meets her thigh. She tugs at them, trying to cover more of her body, but there just isn't enough fabric. No complaints here. I look away when she opens the fridge and bends down. Half of her ass has to be hanging out of those little shorts, and I have to force my feet to stay planted here, not to grab a handful of her. This is something new for me, this urgency, this gnawing throb from my chest to my groin. She pulls out a red Gatorade, and I raise my brow to her. I point my index finger at her. Nora smiles and pulls a straight face and covers the bottle's label with her hand. "Two the things," I begin, awkwardly clearing my throat when my voice breaks. Now that she's up, I don't care so much about being quiet. Tessa's probably been lying awake in her bed since 7 anyway. I toss the box of dicey leftovers into the trash and open the fridge again. I grab a carton of eggs and a container of milk and set them on the counter. "Make that 3, I correct myself. "Do you want an omelet?" I open the egg carton and look at her. She glances toward the living room and back to me like she's looking for someone. "She went home," I say. At least, I assumed it was home. She's not here and doesn't have many options that I'm aware of. But given how little I know about her new life, she probably has an entirety of things I don't know about. For example, she could be hiding a hippogriff in her apartment, and I wouldn't even know because I've never even seen her apartment building, let alone been inside of it. "Oh," Nora says, seeming surprised. "Last night," she begins, but I want to finish my 3 things or I won't remember them later. "Wait," I hold my finger up between us. She smiles and dramatically closes her mouth. "First things first. Omelet?" I reach into the cabinet in front of me and grab the frying pan with one hand while turning on the stovetop with the other. Honestly, it's the smoothest, most coordinated move I've made in the past 24 hours. "Yes, please," Nora responds in a voice that sounds like it should still be in bed. I can hardly imagine how it would be to wake up to this woman every morning. Her hair would be messy and probably tied up on her head. Her legs would be smooth and tanned, and I bet she doesn't even have a tan line. "I'm a vegetarian, though, so only cheese for me." "I have some onions and peppers," I offer. She nods, giving me an impressed smile. "Don't talk dirty to me so early in the morning." Her smile is contagious, and I'm impressed that I caught on to her kitchen humor. Though my 2-egg omelet won't be very brag-worthy, it will be competent, and as a pastry chef, she likes when men can stand their own in the kitchen. Or so I assume. Using a small bowl, I crack 2 eggs on the side. "Now, for my 2nd thing." I look at her to make sure I have her attention. Her eyes are on mine, and she lets her hair down. It falls in thick waves of deep brown around her shoulders, and when she shakes her head, I'm convinced that I've been thrown into a shampoo commercial. Would it be weird to say that? Will I sound like a guy who's trying too hard? I choose not to say anything. Comparing her to a shampoo commercial can't be a normal compliment, and I really don't need to dredge up any more reasons for her to think I'm lame. Instead of taking a chance on being a creep, I dive straight into the pile of things I would like to figure out between us. "I didn't know you two were roommates," I begin to explain. "I didn't know that Dakota would be at the bar. I'm sorry if me leaving there embarrassed you in front of your friends. I really was looking forward." My throat is dry and I may cough mid-sentence, but keep going. "To spending time with you. I don't know how much you know about Dakota and me, but..." Nora holds a hand up. I shut my mouth and pour a splash of milk into the bowl of beaten eggs and open the fridge again. Nora walks over to the stove and turns down the heat. That's probably a good thing. She looks at the floor and then up at me. "I know you didn't know. And I had no fucking idea that you were the guy she was talking about. She never told us anything about you that would even make me begin to think you knew her at all. She didn't even mention your name." And when she says that, there's something in her tone that I'm not sure I want to figure out. She lifts herself onto the counter a few feet away from me. Her feet dangle over the wooden cabinets. But I'm not mad or anything. Her tone is flat, paper lying under a pile of books flat. So don't worry about it. I get it, and it's fine. Nora is being incredibly understanding, but she has that look glazing over her face again, and it's disconcerting. The one where she looks bored enough to pick at her nail polish. Oh, and what do you know? There she is, one thumb beginning to pick at the other, trying to chip away her black polish. We aren't back together, I tell her. The sting of Dakota's confession still burns at me, nagging at my mind. Nora grins, looking up from her hands. It wouldn't be any of my business if you were. She shrugs her shoulders as if I'd just told her the sky is blue, and I cock my head to the side. The eggs are cooking now, hissing at me from the steaming pan, and the cheese is nearly melted, so I grab her veggies and a slice of ham from the deli bag. Meat, she makes a disgusted face. And lunch meat at that. I was starting to get a little too impressed. Good thing you brought out the Hillshire Farms. When she laughs, I realize I don't think I want to let her change the subject. I want to know why she thinks my relationship is none of her business. Were we not out together last night? Everything was fine for 5 minutes before you know what hit the fan. Also, this meat isn't your typical packaged lunch meat. It's cut from the deli. I pay an extra $3 a pound for that difference written in red ink on a yellow sticker. This is worth mentioning. That's how you stay so fit, then? I point to her body with the spatula that I just used to flip the omelet. Not eating processed lunch meat? She nods, shrugging her shoulders. She scoots a little closer to me. No, I don't eat meat, but I still have to watch what I eat. I could easily gulp down this entire bag of cheese, and I may do just that, she says, pointing to the cheese on the counter. I finish up her omelet, then drop it onto a paper plate and start cooking up my own. All the while I watch as she mentally adds another demerit to my score sheet, that list that women make inside their heads when they first meet a guy. Cuteness? 8 points. Realistically, anywhere between 6 and 10, I would say I'm a solid 7.5. Height? 8 points. For some reason, at 5'11", I get 8 points. Cooking skills, 5 points. Using lunch meat in his omelet, -2. Paper plates, -1. I'm electing to ignore the fact that I had to lose at least 10 points for last night. More than likely, I'm close to a 2-point average right now. But I realized as I got older that to stay in shape, I have to work a little harder than most people do. She pokes at her leg, and I get distracted by a small freckle in the center of her thigh. Her shorts are so short, and my eyes follow the freckle up to another one, to another one. It's like the brown speckles have aligned perfectly to form a trail to the edge of her shorts. It's only human nature to follow the dots. She turns slightly and looks at her own ass and thighs. But I like to keep some things the way they are. I'm sweating. I may pass out from the rise in temperature induced by the pushing of her ass out slightly, subtly. And because now I'm staring at the back of her thighs, her hand grabs a chunk of her own flesh of her ass and she looks at me. I look away. I have to. I should speak. I should say something cool back to her. Problem is, I can't think of anything remotely cool to say. And I don't want her to think that I'm thinking that she's thinking, damn it, I'm overthinking again. Especially when I bake for a living and a hobby, she continues, as if she had not just discombobulated my brain. I would rather go without Wi-Fi than sweets. She turns back to me, and somehow I manage to not return to the freckles on the front of her thighs. Her declaration is serious, and I can tell by the way she's bugging her eyes out and pursing her lips that she means business. I almost pretend that I'm one of those trendy techie people who immediately ask for the Wi-Fi password wherever they go, but after last night, I don't have the energy to pretend much of anything. You make it sound like this is life or death, I tease. She grins at me wholeheartedly. and then I make a U-turn in our conversation. Second thing, part B. If you want to talk about Dakota, we can. Nora shoots me an annoyed glare. I ignore it. I want her to know that I'm not one of those guys who doesn't tell you what's on his mind and makes you guess. And by the time you figure it out, you've already forgotten what the problem was in the first place. That guy is not me. I was raised by a single mom, and I credit her for my communication skills. I don't just swallow half-truths, and I don't give them out. I wouldn't just leave with my ex and not want to explain everything to the girl I was actually on a date with. I don't want her to create this version of me that she thinks she knows. I want her to base her opinion of me on facts and good experiences. But so far, I haven't given her a great example of what type of man I am. I wipe out the pan and spray the non-stick spray onto the non-stick surface. Neither product actually works completely, but still, only half of my meals get stuck to the bottom of the pan. That's a win, the way things go for me. Come on, I say, trying to guide her into the conversation. Nora eyes me tentatively. Since I get the feeling that you aren't going to let this go, I'll talk about how insane it is that she's my roommate and you're Tessa's roommate. Talk about a small fucking world. She tilts her head back and shakes it. It is such a small world. Too small, if you ask me. I'm so curious as to how it could possibly be that my ex-girlfriend ended up rooming with my friend, Nora. How did you meet her? If she's in the ballet academy and you're a baker. Nora's neck rolls and she holds up her hand. I'm not a baker. I'm a chef. Her tone lets me know that she gets that a lot and she doesn't care for the generalization. Oops. Anyway, Nora continues, my old roommate from college, Maggie, posted an online ad for a third. Dakota showed up one day with one bag around her arm and the biggest attitude I've ever seen. I can tell by the face she's making that she regrets saying this in front of me. No offense, she adds hesitantly. None taken. I feel as if I should be defending Dakota, but I don't want to just yet. Nora's entitled to her own opinion of her, and I'm in no place to be her defender. Who are the two guys she slept with? Do I know them? It's more than likely that I don't. I know a handful of guys in New York, and she's been single the whole time she's lived here. I don't want to begin to consider that she slept with anyone we knew in Michigan. Well, it's just my luck that I tried to go on a date with my ex's roommate. I'm sorry, I say with a laugh, aiming to lighten up the energy in the room. Her expression tightens, and she shrugs her shoulders again. It's fine. It wasn't much of a date. I don't really have the time to date anyone anyway. So what was your third thing? There's the omelet, the uncomfortable date-not-date, and then there was something else. When I pause for a moment to remember, she leans over and pokes at my cheek. My heart leaps. What was the third thing? She leans back and rests her head against the cabinets, then opens the top of her Gatorade bottle and takes a sip. Perfect timing. This, I point to the red perpetrator in her hand. Nora closes her mouth, cheeks full of Gatorade, and widens her eyes. You hated it just the other day, and now this. I tap the bottle with my fingers as she swallows a huge gulp. A dribble spills down her chin as she tries to hold it in, and I laugh, leaning across her. Her thighs separate and she doesn't move away when I take the towel from the counter and gently dab the corner of her chin. I'm between her thighs now and my entire body couldn't be more aware of it. She swallows, then reaches up and holds onto my forearm with both hands. Her fingers press into my arm and I lean closer. My chest is touching hers now and her ankles are wrapping around my legs. I'm so damn attracted to her that it hurts. Physically and mentally, in every place it could hurt, it stabs at me, want and need mixing together into a cocktail of confusion. She's no longer a silly, giggling girl sitting on a countertop, batting her lashes at me. She's a seductive, sensual woman wrapping one of her arms around my neck, letting her nails drag along behind her smooth fingertips. Goosebumps rise on my skin, and there's no way she didn't just feel me shiver. And there's no way I'm letting that bother me when she's wrapped around me like this. I'm only a little taller than her when she's sitting on the high countertop, but when I look down at her, she's breathing heavily. Her lashes dark, resting on her cheeks as she looks down. I move my hand to her chin, lifting gently until her eyes meet mine. She inches closer. Her breath whispers into my mouth, and I grip her thighs with my hands on instinct. Only it shouldn't be an instinct because I've only touched this woman once. Yet I can't seem to convince my body otherwise. It has a mind of its own, and I'm in no shape to stop it. She breathes my name, and I take it in, appreciating the way her tongue seems to wrap my name in sugar. My hands move up and up until they reach the side of her thighs where her ass begins. In the wake of my hands, red streaks blotch her smooth skin. Her breathing accelerates again when she looks down at her thighs and up to my eyes. I gently nudge her cheek with my jaw and she turns her head. My mouth delicately touches her neck in small pecks of admiration and need. She moans. Her legs tighten around my waist and she reaches up and grips my hand. She rocks her body against mine and I move my mouth to her ear, drenched in lust for her. It's coating me, covering me. She puts her hands on mine and presses them into her legs. She moves both of our hands closer to the apex of her thighs, and the drawstring on my sweats rubs against her. She moans again. Her nails press into my hands, and I'm in a daze. This woman, who I know close to nothing about, has me dry-humping her on the kitchen counter with Tessa at home in her bedroom, after Dakota skipped out on me this morning, and despite these things, I am completely at her mercy. It's like I'm sucking in laughing gas. Like I can't tell black from white or innocent touches from sexual advances. This kiss is strong enough to bring me to my knees. She looks like a dark angel through my hooded eyes, and though I've never been religious, now I am a devout Noraite. I shouldn't be doing this, and she shouldn't be doing this, but I want to keep doing this. I desire this. I need to do this. On the counter, on the kitchen table, even on the kitchen floor. I feel her pull away when my teeth brush against her ear. This is, she breathes. This is bad for me, for both of us. She pushes her hand against my chest, and I back away. Good God. She touches her hand to her chest and takes a few deep breaths. You are so bad for me, and I'm even worse for you. She jumps down from the counter and tugs at her shorts in frantic desperation to conceal her body from my eyes. I try not to stare, knowing that with every second that passes, she's letting doubt creep up her spine and is checking off the list of reasons why Tessa's loser roommate isn't good enough for her. She's trying to tell me something, and I'm doing that stereotypical man thing where I stare at her instead of listening to what she's saying. Except I'm not. I'm trying to keep a good grasp on reality and what's happening between us. Good thing I'm not completely clueless, and I'm fully capable of looking back up at her eyes and listening to her list the reasons why we can't jump each other's bones every time we are alone in the kitchen. Chapter 17. It's the kitchen, I add when she touches on the third reason we can't sleep together. I missed the first two reasons she stated because I couldn't stop being one of those guys who stares, the category I was just claiming to be excluded from. In my defense, she was fumbling over words strung together as excuses while adjusting her bra. It was hard not to stare at her soft tits pushing one way than the other. The kitchen makes us crazy, I say, then turn and crack two eggs into the bowl and stir them with a spoon. If she doesn't want me to kiss her, I won't kiss her. The way my body aches for her can be ignored. It can. I'm pretty sure. Nora watches me, looking pleased that I'm continuing with breakfast after all. I reach over and grab a third egg. When I oil the pan, she walks over and takes the milk jug from the counter. She adds at least a half cup more to the bowl and opens my silverware drawer. She grabs a fork and stirs the eggs with it. Her fork moves much quicker than my spoon, and I back away, bowing slightly to her chefness. She appreciates my gesture and laughs, although the rain outside nearly drowns out the sound. I wish it would stop so I could hear her cute laugh better. Nora opens the top of one of the plastic containers of pre-cut vegetables. She adds a handful of onions to the pan, then peppers, and waits to add the eggs. While she's effortlessly outperforming me in the kitchen, she leans against the counter and looks at me. Tessa's my friend, and if this gets too messy, it could ruin that. That was reason number 4? Or maybe 5? We have too much baggage, both of us, she adds. 7. Maybe 8 if we count our scores separately. How many reasons do you have? 10? I say lightly. Or would you like to come on my run with me so you can finish telling me all of the reasons why we can't be friends? I wasn't saying we couldn't be friends. I was talking about all of this, she says, and waves her hands around in front of herself. I imagine her running beside me, listing off reasons word by word. I have a few too. I'm just not as eager to say them as she is. She's still waving between our bodies. I decide to fuck with her just a little. The air? You mean the nitrogen and oxygen? Reaching her free hand over to me, she clamps it over my mouth and gives me a shut the fuck up, you adorable bastard look that shoots through me like Cupid's arrow. Yikes, good thing I didn't say that out loud. I meant the making out, the heavy petting. Her eyes glance over to my lips and stay there. I fail to see how petting animals is a problem, I start, but the hand goes right back over my mouth. We can't keep doing that and keep everything from getting out of control. Your ex is my roommate. She lives with me. She knows where I sleep. She smiles, and I think she's only half teasing. I was only thinking we could take each other's mind off whatever baggage we had. Tessa told me about your breakup. Her eyes fill with sympathy. And I sort of hate when people feel sorry for me. But I nod. I understand. I wasn't sure what you were thinking, how you were feeling. And I was trying to get over Dakota, I explain. She nods her head. I'm glad you were, but let's just agree to be friendly. No touching, no kissing. Her voice slows and her eyes glance away from me. Definitely no thigh grabbing. And no ear nibbling, no throat kissing. She clears her throat and straightens her back. I clear my throat too and look for a towel to wipe my sweaty palms on. I'm getting caught up in her words and whirled back to 2 minutes ago when I was possessed by one of those guys in romance novels. She was about one more moan away from me saying things like, I shall ravish you, in my best attempt at a seductor's voice. A list of romantic comedies pops into my head, guiding my thoughts. The next step in this agreement is for you to propose a friends with benefits type of relationship, and then we bicker over it for about 30 seconds before we agree, I say. 1 month later, one of us will be in love, and it will be messy. Cut to another month later, we have ourselves a perfect relationship or a complete disaster. There's no middle ground. It really is an indisputable fact that the movies have proved. I like that I can be completely unfiltered around her. I've made a fool out of myself more than once, so she should be used to it by now. There's no history, I don't have any expectations placed on me. She laughs and nods. Her omelet is browned now, and my kitchen smells amazing. She slides it onto the plate and blows at the light puff of steam coming from the dish. Agreed. Nora tucks a loose strand of hair behind her ear. We can easily avoid all of that mess now and agree to be friends. I don't have time for catfights in restaurants with 20-year-old girls who shouldn't even be drinking in public in the first place. Somehow the way she says that makes her sound much older, and I feel like a child being scolded by his mom. I'm building a career in a thriving city, and I don't want to fuck that up for some cute college kid. Her use of the word kid stabs at my already wounded ego. I'm nearly 21, and I have more in common with the people my parents' age than I do with college kids. I've already been stopped twice on campus by students who thought I was a professor. I have that mature look. It's true, my mom says it too. Ugh, using my mom as a standard, maybe I am just a kid. That hurts a little. I wouldn't have thought Nora would see me as anything other than a peer. But apparently to her, I'm just some college kid who was going to be her distraction from whatever. Friends, then. I deliver her a smile, and she nods. From here on out, I will be only friendly to Nora and Dakota. I will not let things get messy. No chance.
Chapter 18. It's been 2 weeks since I've heard from Dakota. She hasn't reached out to me once since she slipped out of my bed in the middle of the night. Nor has she answered either of my calls or the 2 texts I've sent. Maybe I've overdone it, bothering her too much when she obviously doesn't want to talk, but I want to make sure she's okay. No matter how many times I try to remind myself that that's not my job anymore, my head just won't listen. Or maybe it's my heart, possibly both. I know Dakota well enough to know that when she needs her space, she will take it and no one can change that. The unfamiliar part is that I'm not used to being the one she needs space from. Since we decided to be friends, I've seen Nora twice, but only spoken to her once. Friends without kissing. Friends don't kiss, and friends definitely don't think about kissing. I'm still working on that part. She hasn't started to come around less. She's just leaving earlier, and I'm coming home later than I used to. I've been staying a little later at work to help Posey close. She's been picking up so many of Jane's shifts lately that I have a feeling she could use the help. She seems overwhelmed. I don't want to be too pushy and probe too much into her life, but I've always been pretty good at reading people. We have become something close to friends during our long shifts together, and she's been sharing more and more of her life with me while we scrub dishes and clean coffee grounds from every nook and cranny of grind. I'm enjoying the extra hours and her company. I'm lonely and soaking our conversations up like a sponge, like the details of her life somehow make me feel more involved in the wider world. She was born and raised here, a dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker, something millions of people in the city strive to imitate. Her family used to live in Queens, and when she was 15, her mom passed away, and Lila and Posey moved to Brooklyn to live with their grandma. It's nice having someone to talk to about random stuff. It's nice to hear about someone else's life and opinions and thoughts when I don't want to think about my own. I don't want to think about Dakota, and I don't want to miss Nora. Am I a bad person for liking 2 people? Really, though, I don't know if I like Nora or if I'm just attracted to her. I don't know enough about her to compare to my feelings for Nora. I mean, Dakota. Shit, I'm a mess. Am I being too hard on myself by keeping my distance from both of them? I've loved Dakota for years. I know her inside and out. She's my family. In my heart of hearts, she owns half the real estate. Nora is another story. She's wishy-washy and hot and cold and undeniably sexy and flirtatious. I'm half attracted, half curious about her, and I keep having to remind myself that we killed our potential relationship before it ever had a chance to bloom into anything anyway. So I can't sit around moping over losing something that wasn't mine to begin with. So it's been 2 weeks of avoidance of the woman in question. Picking up later shifts at work, joining more study groups, or staying home and watching cooking shows with Tessa. She's obsessed with them lately, and they provide good background noise when I'm doing my schoolwork. I can pay just a little bit of attention to the shows, but I don't care enough to have to give my full attention to them. And I'm not convinced that Tessa does either. One night during Cupcake Wars, my phone buzzes on the leather couch and Harden's name lights up on my screen. Tessa's eyes follow the noise and flash at the sight of his name. Her eyes dart back to the screen, and she pulls her pouty bottom lip between her teeth. She's freaking miserable, and I hate it. Hardin's miserable, and he deserves it. But I still hate it. I don't know what kind of mountain Hardin will have to move to earn her forgiveness, but I know damned well he would even build a mountain if he had to, a whole row of them with her face carved into them before he would live his life without her. That sort of desperation, that kind of burning, throbbing love, I haven't known it. I have loved slow and deep with Dakota. It was, still is, a steady kind of love. We had our share of complications and fights, but 9 times out of 10, it was her and me fighting against the world. It was me, sword drawn, cannon loaded, ready to charge at any enemy who crossed a line. Mostly the foe was her dad, the biggest, nastiest troll of all. I spent many a night rescuing my princess from the yellow-stained walls and worn Cinderella-printed curtains tacked over the windows of her house. I climbed the dirty, sun-damaged siding and opened the dust-covered window and pulled her to the safety of warm chocolate chip cookies and the soft voice of my mother. Times were rough at her house, and when Carter was gone, even the best cookies, the softest voices, and the tightest hugs couldn't comfort Dakota. We shared pain and pleasure, but the more I think about it, and the more I compare it to the relationships I see around me and the ones I read about in my books, the more I realize that while Dakota and I were family, we were also nothing but kids. Is someone even supposed to spend his whole life with the one who helps him grow? Or is that person simply a stop along the way to who he will become, their role ending when he learns what he needs to make it to the next stop? I once felt like Dakota was my entire journey and my destination, but I'm starting to feel like I was no more than a stop along the way for her. Do I, Landon Gibson, amateur relationship participant, even know what the hell I'm talking about? I grab my phone as it goes to voicemail. I call Hardin right back, and he answers on the first ring. "Hey," I say, looking at Tessa as she pulls the blanket up to her neck like it's protecting her from something. "I'm about to book my flight. It's next month," he says, loud enough for Tessa to hear. And with every word from Hardin's mouth, she visibly shudders. She stands up and walks to her room without a word. I whisper so she doesn't hear me. "I don't know if it's a good..." "Why?" he interrupts. "What's going on? Where's Tess?" "She just went into her room after shaking like someone was screaming at her the moment she overheard your voice. It's harsh to say it like that, I know, but it's honest." Hardin makes a noise that pains me. "If she would just speak to me. I fucking hate this shit." I sigh. I know he hates it. So does she. So do I. But he did this to himself, to her, and it's not fair of me to push her toward him if she doesn't want to go. "Try to give her the phone," he demands. "You know I can't do that." "Fuck, man." I can picture him running his fingers through his hair. He hangs up the phone, and I don't call him back. I wait a few minutes and knock on Tessa's door. She opens almost immediately, and I take a step back into the hallway. I glance at the tabby cat picture and wonder again how I managed to never pay attention to these weird little pictures before. "You okay?" I ask my friend. She looks down at her feet, then back up at me. "Yeah." "You're a terrible liar," I say. She steps back into her room and leaves the door open, gesturing for me to come inside. She sits on the edge of her bed, and I look around her room. It's spotless, as usual, and she's done a little more decorating since I've last seen it. Her TV is no longer on the dresser. In its place are stacks of books, organized by author's last name. 3 worn copies of Pride and Prejudice catch my eye. Tessa lies back on her bed and stares up at the ceiling. "I really am okay with him coming to visit. He's your family, and I won't keep you from seeing him." "You're my family too," I remind her. I sit on the opposite edge of her bed, near the blue upholstered headboard. The color matches her curtains, and I can't see a single dust bunny in her windowsill. "I'm just waiting and waiting, and I don't know how to stop." Her voice is flat, detached. "Waiting for what?" for him to stop being able to hurt me, even hearing his voice. I pause to let her catch her breath, then say, "It will take a while, I assume. I wish I hated him too, so I could tell her how terrible he is for her, that she's better off without him, but I can't. I can't and won't pretend that they both aren't better when they're together."
"Can I ask you something?"
Tessa's voice is soft.
"Of course."
I prop my feet up on her bed and hope she doesn't notice how dirty my socks are on her white comforter.
"How did you get over Dakota? It makes me feel like shit that you were feeling this way and I barely comforted you. I was so consumed by my own problems that I never thought about you feeling the way I feel now. I'm sorry I'm such a shitty friend."
I laugh softly. "You aren't a shitty friend. My situation was a lot different than yours."
That's so Landon to say that.
"I knew you would tell me I'm not a shitty friend." She smiles, and I can't remember the last time I saw her do this.
"But really, how did you get over her? Does it still eat at you when you see her?"
"That's a good question. How did I get over her? I don't even know how to answer that question. I don't want to admit it, but I don't think I ever felt as low as Tessa does now. It hurt when Dakota broke up with me, especially the way she did it. But I didn't drown in my own misery. I held my head up and tried to stay as supportive of her as I could and kept going on with my own life. It was so different for me. Dakota and I had barely seen each other in the last 2 years, and I wasn't always around her the way you were with Harden. We never lived together, and I think I was used to feeling alone anyway." Tessa rolls over and rests her chin on her elbow.
"You felt alone when you were dating?"
I nod. "She lived across the country, remember?" Tessa nods.
"Yes, but you still shouldn't have felt alone."
I don't know what to say. I did feel alone, even when Dakota and I talked every day. I don't know what that says about me or our relationship.
"Do you feel alone now?"
Tessa asks, her gray eyes focused on me.
"Yeah,"
I answer honestly. She rolls back over and looks up at the ceiling again.
"Me too."
Chapter 19. My classes felt so long today. Well, they felt like that all week. I couldn't focus after everything that went down with Dakota, and then with Harden calling to tell me he's coming just next weekend. Next weekend. That doesn't give me much time to get Tessa used to the idea of him being here, in her space. When he called back that night, I didn't answer. It was the first time Tessa and I had really connected in a while, and we were too busy wallowing in our aloneness. It was sad, but nice, too, to be there with her. And miracle of miracles, instead of calling back several times in a row, Harden actually left me a voicemail. Fairly amazing, really. But thinking back on it, I remembered that he claimed he had to come because he had an appointment in the city that he can't miss. He has to be applying for jobs here. Why else would he have an unmovable appointment here in New York? It has to be for a job. Or he's tired of being away from Tessa. He can't stay away from her for long. He must need his fix. When I reach my building, a loud delivery truck is idling in the middle of the street. The deli below gets deliveries at all times of the night. Voices and the heavy sound of doors closing, opening, closing again drove me nuts at first because I was so used to the stillness and silence of the suburbs in Washington State, in the Scott Castle on top of the hill. I still remember how big that house looked to me as we pulled up in my mom's station wagon. We had chosen the cheap way to travel, driving cross-country despite Ken's many attempts to buy us airline tickets and have our stuff shipped. Looking back, I think my mom had too much pride to let him believe she was around for anything other than her love for him. I remember the first time I heard her laugh in front of him. It was a new laugh, the kind that changed her face and her voice. The corners of her eyes drew up, and the joy that emerged from her throat seemed to come from deep inside her and filled the room with light and fresh air. I felt like she was a different, happier version of the mom I knew and loved. Of course, when I talk to her now, she always mentions something about me that's worrying her. Case in point, my sleeping habits since I moved to the city. She keeps asking when I'm going to find a doctor to look into it, but I'm not ready to do most of the practical parts of living in a new city. Seeing a doctor and getting a new driver's license are things that can wait. Besides, I don't want to drive in this city, and as far as I'm concerned, the real problem I have right now is those 3 a.m. garbage trucks. So, instead of a doctor's visit, I got my white noise machine. It helped me tremendously. Tessa likes the noise, but she said she grew up next to a railroad track and missed the sound of the trains during the night. Lately, we both seem to be reaching for anything that reminds us of home. My sense in New York is that your home is truly your castle, or if not a castle, at least the cubbyhole in the city you can control. Apparently, for both Tessa and me, controlling the sounds we hear helps us feel in control in general, just in different ways. Inside, the hallways of my building are empty and silent. When I step off the elevator and into the hallway on my floor, it smells like sugar and spice. Nora must be here, and she and Tessa must be making a sweet, flowery mess in the kitchen. Music is playing, the crooning voice of an edgy girl taking a stand for disregarded youth who are the new Americana fills the apartment when I open the door. I kick off my shoes and leave them by the door. When I walk into the kitchen, I put the gallon of milk I bought while I was out on the counter near Tessa. But it's Nora who thanks me first. "It's nothing," I tell her, pulling my jacket off my shoulders and down my arms. I really need to do something for Ellen for her birthday. She looked even less excited today when I asked her about her big day this week. I was walking right by the store when Tessa texted me, I add. Still, Nora smiles at me. God, she's even more beautiful than I remember, and it's only been a week since I've seen her. Nora grabs the milk and walks over to the fridge. You missed the most epic baking fail. Tessa added whipped cream instead of whipping cream to the scone recipe. We said that was going to be a secret, Tessa grumbles playfully. She looks at me. The dough fell flat. Yeah. After the scones burned, Nora says over her shoulder. I think I like how comfortable she seems to be feeling here. I like that she walks with ease through the kitchen, her back straight and her full mouth partly smiling, relaxed. She opens the fridge and places the milk inside. I look away when she bends over to grab a pitcher full of cold water from the bottom shelf. I try not to let my mind linger on the tightness of her white pants. They aren't quite sweats, but they aren't really yoga pants either. I don't care what they are. Her ass looks incredible with the fabric stretched over it.